Good morning. It is good to be with you. I was telling the Bible class earlier how thankful I am to be here, but especially for my good friends John and Ross. Those guys mean a lot to me. My wife and I moved here to Cookeville a couple of years ago, and we didn't know a soul when we got here. And so those guys have been great friends to us. And so very, very thankful for them. If you have your Bibles, go to John chapter 11. John chapter 11 is where we're going to be this morning. And so we're gonna study from there. We're gonna read a lot this morning from John chapter 11. I remember being in Miss Boncher's English class when we got the news. The towers had been struck by a couple of planes and in New York City, and they were falling. I remember watching TV in every class that day in school. We would sit there, and every class we rotated to, the teachers would turn the TV on, and we just watched the news that day. We didn't do anything else but watch the news. And I remember getting home from school that day, and my brother and I got home, and my mom told us both that we needed to go get some kind of paper or journal or something and write down what had happened and how we felt, because that was going to be a day that we were not going to want to forget. I remember watching, you know, as people were mourning and crying, and I remember what tragedy felt like on a national level on that day. I remember when I was 14 years old when I heard about my friend Graydon. Graydon was a friend of mine that we had grown up together. We played Little League sports together. We played on the same basketball team, football team, and baseball team. Graydon and I shared a lot of, you know, good times. I remember at 14 years old when we heard that Graydon had a tumor on his brain. And I remember those feelings and those emotions. And you know, you kind of wonder, like, what's going on? You know, I'm 14. I remember at 15 years old, being in Miss Hill's business class. And in that class at 15 years old, we that day were learning how to balance a checkbook in class. And I remember when the phone call came to the school and our principal got on the intercom and he announced that Graydon had passed away at 15 years old. And I remember those feelings of, like, why? I remember going to the funeral, and I was riding in a car with my friends, and they canceled school that day for the funeral, and we all went over, and we sat in the biggest church in town. The church he went to wasn't big enough. The biggest church in town, we all went in, and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people were at this funeral for Graydon, and I remember amongst the hundreds of people, I could hear his dad crying. And I'll never forget the sounds of a weeping father for a son. I remember what tragedy felt like on that day. And those images and those emotions and those things stay with you, right? And there are probably things that are running through your mind that you can remember what tragedy feels like, right? When bad things strike, you remember what those days and you remember every detail. It's like seared into your brain. I remember those things. And I'm sure that you do too. Moments of grief and loss and hardship and trial. And oftentimes those moments are met with questions, right? We ask why. They're met with doubt. They're met with fear. They're met with anger. Why does this happen? Or the question that we're going to find this morning in our text is, God, if you would have been here, this wouldn't have happened. God, if you were around, if you were here, if you were real, this wouldn't have happened. And we're going to find that question this morning in John chapter 11. And maybe you can remember times where you've asked that question. Or maybe you can remember times where you felt those feelings. I want to be clear this morning. My goal is to not attempt even to solve the problem of evil in the next 15, 20 minutes. I'm not going to try to wrap a bow on one of life's greatest questions, right? I'm not going to do that. My goal this morning is not to try to arrive at some firm conclusion at why pain and suffering exist in this world. That's not what I want to do. My goal is simply this. This morning, I want us to see Jesus in our text. I want us to see his heart through this story. And through that, I want us to find him in our lives as well. That's our goal this morning in John chapter 11. As we get started, I want to just let you know up front, when we're going to read this text, the whole text, I want us to grasp a good context of it here in John chapter 11. And so after we do that, I want to give you just two thoughts I have from this story. And then I want to give you or ask ourselves two questions. OK, so if we can do that together, that'd be great. Two thoughts, two questions. John chapter 11, we're going to begin in verse 1. And we're going to read about the death of Lazarus, one of Jesus's very close friends. It says, "Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, in the village of Mary and her sister Martha. It was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters sent to him saying, 'Lord, he whom you love is ill.' But when Jesus heard that, he said, 'This illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it.' Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister Lazarus, and her sister Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer at the place where he was. Then after this, he said to the disciples, 'Let us go to Judea again.' The disciples said to him, 'Rabbi, the Jews were just now seeking to stone you, and you're going there again?' Jesus answered, 'Are there not 12 hours in the day? If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble because he sees the light of this world. But if anyone walks in the light, he stumbles because the light is not in him.' After saying these things, he said to them, 'Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I go to awaken him.'" Very important to see that. The disciples, verse 12, said to him, "O Lord, if he had fallen asleep, he will recover." Now Jesus had spoken of his death, but they thought that he meant taking rest and sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, "Lazarus has died. And for your sake, I am glad that I was not there so that you may believe. But let us go to him." So Thomas, called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, "Let us also go that we may die with him." Verse 17, "Now when Jesus came, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles off, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them concerning their brother. So when Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, but Mary remained seated in the house. Martha said to Jesus, 'Lord," you know this question, right? "If you would have been here, Lord, if you would have been here, my brother would not have died. But even now, I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you." Verse 23, Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." And Martha says, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection." But Jesus says to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this?" She said to him, "Yes, Lord. I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming into the world." When she had said this, she went and called her sister Mary, saying in private, "The teacher is here, and he's calling for you." And when she heard it, she rose quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come into the village, but was still in the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who were with her in the house consoling her saw Mary rise quickly to go out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to weep there. Now when Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet, and she said, "You guessed it, Lord. Lord, if you would have been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and greatly troubled. And he said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." And Jesus wept. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him?" But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man also have kept this man from dying?" And then Jesus, deeply moved again, came to the tomb. It was a cave. A stone lay against it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, by this time there will be an odor. He's been dead 4 days." But Jesus says to her, "Did I not tell you if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this on account of the people standing around, that they may believe that you sent me." When he said these things, he cried out with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The man who had died came out, his hands and his feet bound with linen straps, and his face wrapped with a cloth. Jesus says to him, "Unbind him and let him go." There's a lot that goes on in those 44 verses. But I want to share with you, we know a lot of this story, right? Jesus loses Lazarus, and he goes, and he knows that Lazarus has died. He goes to raise him from the dead. Mary and Martha are angry, I'm sure, that he's not there. Lord, if you'd have been here, he wouldn't have died. And so I want us to take just a few minutes and kind of dissect this with two observations I have, and then two questions we can ask ourselves. And then the lesson will be, as they say, ours, right? The first observation that I have for us this morning as we read this text is this, that Jesus lost a friend. He lost a friend. One thing that I appreciate about this story in particular is that I think this text humanizes Jesus for us a little bit. It's so often that we see Jesus as, you know, he is God in the flesh, and yes, he's very much human as well. And we see Jesus in the context of healings and miracles. We see him in the context of the cross and resurrection and saving and dying and rising. And we see Jesus in all of these ways that we can never do, right? We see Christ in all of these ways as deity, and he is deity. But he's human too here. And this text for us humanizes Jesus. Jesus had feelings. He had feelings. He had an earthly family. He felt pain. And in fact, here in this text, Jesus lost someone that he loved. He knows what it's like to go through pain, to go through grief, to go through sorrow, to feel all of those emotions, right? There's no emotion that we can associate with death that Christ hasn't felt. There's no emotion that we can associate with loss that Christ hasn't felt. He felt all of those here. He felt it. And so I want us to see this story through that lens, that Jesus lost a friend. And he knows what it's like. A friend that he knew and that he loved and that he cared for. He lost a friend. And so when we go through those times, I think about times in my life, you think about times in your life, Jesus knows. He knows what it's like to lose a friend. And even though he is God, even though he is all of these things that we can never be, he lost a friend. The same that we do. Same way. So he experiences that and he knows that. But I also want to share with you in this text that the Lord Jesus is emotionally invested in his people. I don't know how many times that I've watched replays of football games. I don't know if you're a football fan in here or not. But I'm a Tennessee Vols fan, unfortunately for me. I like to watch their games. And so I don't know how many times that I've watched replays of their games, specifically the ones they win, right? And more specifically, the one they won 20 years ago, the national championship, you know, 20 years ago, okay? And so I've watched that game against Florida State, you know, 1,000 times. And every time I know what's going to happen, right, that they're going to win the game. It's going to be close. They're going to win by 6 points, right? It never changes. Every time I watch it, same score always happens, okay? And so for people watching a game, if you're a sports fan, right, watching a game live can be an emotional roller coaster, right? And so when your team is doing great, like you're fired up, you're excited, you're ready to go. When your team is doing terrible, you would rather punch your TV, right? I mean, it's an emotional like roller coaster for you. And you're all upset, and then you're all happy, and then you're back upset again, okay? And so that happens to people all the time. You know what that's like, right, to go through some of those moments. What's funny is when you watch a game on replay, a game that Tennessee wins, it's not an emotional roller coaster, right? Because you know they won the game. And so when I watch Tennessee play Florida State January 4th, 1999, okay, I know that when Tennessee throws an interception towards the end of the game, they still win the game. I'm not upset anymore because they won the game, right? What's interesting here in this text, Jesus, from the beginning, before he even goes to see Lazarus, Jesus knew Lazarus had died, right? He knew. There was no confusion. There was no hesitation. There was no, I wonder what I'm going to find when I get there, right? There was no mad rush to the hospital to make it in time. Jesus knew Lazarus was dead. In fact, he waited 2 extra days because he wanted to show what he was going to do is for the glory of God. He knew what was happening. There was no confusion here, right? He knew Lazarus had died. And he also knew that what he's going to go do is raise his friend from the dead. There was no confusion there either. There wasn't no, like, I wonder if it's going to work today. Like, I wonder if God's going to grant me some powers. It was none of that, right? There was no confusion. There was no, like, will this medicine work for Lazarus? It was, he is dead. My friend is dead. I'm going to see him as a dead man, and I'm going to make him come out of that grave. He knew what he was doing. Jesus knew the outcome. Just like I know every outcome of that 98 game, Jesus knew the outcome, and yet, Jesus still cried. Isn't that interesting? Jesus knew the outcome of what was going to happen. He knew that he could take away the pain and the suffering and the sorrow and the tears and all of that stuff of everybody around there. He knew that Mary and Martha were going to be elated. He knew that all these Jews would see this. He knew all this was going to happen. And he still cried. He still cried. The Lord is emotionally invested in his people. He is. He is. Even when he knows the outcome, Jesus cares. He cares about his people. He cares about our feelings. Right? And I think if Jesus cares enough about his people that many years ago, I think that the same Jesus who has the same abilities and is the same God still cares about us today. And is still just as emotionally invested in his people today as he was with his friend Lazarus. So it's interesting to me that he can know the outcome the whole time and yet still cry. Still be emotionally invested. When we hurt, he hurts. The one who created everything, right? Created everything, he's emotionally invested in me. It's crazy to me to think that Jesus Christ, can know exactly what he's going to do to ease these people's pain, yet is still deeply moved by their hurt. He knows exactly what he's going to do to erase their pain, yet he's still deeply moved by their hurt. And I think we have to believe that that is still true today. That Jesus knows and that he cares. And even though he knows the outcome, he hurts when we hurt. Even though he sees and he knows us personally today, now, in 2017, I think he knows. I think he cares just as much. He's moved by his people. He's moved by his people. He always has been, right? You can look through stories of in the Old Testament and New Testament where Jesus is, and the Lord is moved by his people. He's moved by Moses. He's moved by Abraham when they fight for their people and they plead for their people. He's moved by us emotionally. He's moved by us. And I don't think that's something that we can or should, I guess, rather take lightly, right? That the Lord is moved, emotionally moved by us. I think that's important. I think it matters. And so you want to see Jesus in this passage. You want to see the gospel, the good news, right, on full display in this passage. The good news for us in this context is that we do not hurt alone. We don't. And so there's no situation, there's no dark valley that your life can go into. There's nowhere you can run or hide or whatever from Jesus in any kind of place of pain, sorrow, or hurt that you hurt alone. That place does not exist. It does not exist in the presence of Jesus' followers. He is emotionally invested in his people, in us, and that's special. That's special. And so I think we have to remember, as we see this text for what it is in John 11, I think we have to remember that, A, Jesus lost a friend, just like we do. But we have to remember, too, that Jesus is emotionally invested in us. He's moved by us, his people, okay? Now, I want to ask ourselves 2 questions as we go from here. What do we do with this stuff, okay? 2 questions as we go from here. Is the Lord glorified in my life, even through loss? Is the Lord glorified in my life, even through loss? We see here that verse 4, when Jesus goes to heal Lazarus at the beginning of the story, verse 4 says, when Jesus heard it, He said, this illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, so the Son of God may be glorified through it. There was a mission that Jesus was on. And even though he lost a friend, and even though he was hurt, even though he still cried, even though he was emotionally invested in his people, even though all of that is still true, Jesus Christ still had a mission to glorify God, even through his loss. Even through his loss. And so we see his mission there. We see he's going to glorify the Lord through what he's going to do. Okay? And so the hurt and loss that I experience in my life does not change my mission to glorify God. The hurt and loss that I experience in this life does not change my mission to glorify God. I can and will experience pain. I can and will experience loss. Jesus did. But that doesn't change my mission at all. My mission remains the same even when loss permeates throughout my life. The mission is the same. It does not change. And so just because my mission hasn't changed doesn't mean that everything's going to be okay, right? That doesn't mean that every day I'm going to wake up and I'm going to be happy and I'm going to like have this big smile on my face. It doesn't mean that every Sunday morning I'm going to roll up in here and I'm just going to be grinning from ear to ear. It doesn't mean that. It doesn't have to mean that, right? Just because my mission doesn't change doesn't make everything always okay. But we have the ability. I believe the Lord has put in us the ability to experience hurt and yet still point people back to Jesus. I believe the Lord has given us the ability, humans, people, to experience pain, to experience suffering, to experience hurt, and yet still point people back to Jesus. So the question for us, right, is the Lord glorified in my life even when I experience loss? Because it's really easy to make it about us sometimes, right? Even through hard times. So can we point people back to the cross? I think that we can. I think that we should. And so Jesus lost a friend, right? He lost a friend. He was emotionally invested in his people. He cared about them. He's moved by them. He knows the outcome. He still cries. And his mission never changes. He still points people back to the Lord. And so the last question I want to ask us this morning as we think about this text is, are we emotionally invested in people? I think you maybe have seen this one coming, right? Are we emotionally invested in people? Do I care about people? Do I hurt when they hurt? The Lord has the ability to work in a lot of ways. A lot of ways. And one way we saw this morning in Bible class, and one way I think that we still see now through this, is I think the Lord works through the hands and feet and love and hearts of his people. The Lord can work in a lot of ways, but I think one of the primary ways he works is through his people. And so as people of God, we bring the presence of Christ to people. We bring the peace of Christ to people. And we, as his people, are to be, I believe, emotionally invested in each other. Do we care about each other? It's very cliche to say that we live in a world that encourages like every man for himself, right? But cliches are cliches because they're mostly true, I guess. And so the fact is we do live in that kind of world. We do live in a world that you're encouraged to do what you want because you want to do it, right? And so the question is, as a follower of Jesus, I don't have to subscribe to that theory of the world. I don't have to. It's easy to. I don't have to do that. Do I care about people? So the question is for us, who am I, who are we, who are you emotionally invested in this morning? Who do you care about? Who have you poured into? Who have you invested into today, this week, this month, this year, whatever? Where is your investment going? Is it for people or is it for yourself? Is it for us? I would hope, just like the Lord, that we can be people that care about each other. And even when we can see the outcome, maybe, of situations, that we can still care, that we can still hurt. With people that hurt, that we can still cry with people that cry, that we can rejoice with people that are happy, right? All of that stuff. I hope that we as God's people can be emotionally invested in each other. That when we lose friends, our mission doesn't change. When we experience grief, our mission doesn't change. That through those hurts and through those losses, we can still point people back to the Lord. I think we can do that. I think we have that ability. I think the Lord calls us to that. And so I want to hopefully encourage us with this story of Jesus and Lazarus. I know that this story, as a kid for me, this story was funny, not funny, but it was because it was the shortest verse in the Bible, John 11:35. So, hey, Jesus cried, you know. There's a lot more to it than just Jesus crying, okay? So I hope that we can love each other. Hope that we can care about each other. This morning, if you're not a part of that family of God, I want to encourage you that there is a church family here that loves you and that cares about you and that it is, from the best I can tell, emotionally invested in you. And there's people here that want to see you grow, that want to see you thrive, that want to see you live a life for Jesus. And so this morning, if you want to become part of that family, we encourage you to do that. This morning, if you are someone who feels the need to have the prayers of this church, we want to encourage you with that as well. If anything we can do for you this morning, I'd like to do it as you stand and as you sing.